Well, hey, cousins, you are listening to Revolutionary Hood Rat with Kim Young, a dope Black social worker, and welcome back. We have this episode. I'm not quite sure how long it's going to be. I know there's some things I want to talk about, but I don't got like hella stuff to talk about. So like, let's just kind of see how this goes. You know what I'm saying? But let's begin with some revolutionary news for the week because I have some. So this revolutionary news goes out to the Oregon Board of Licensed Social Work's licensure committee that took a look at alternative pathways to social work licensure. They released their final report and recommendations, and it is a dope report. And so shout out to Patty Farr, Scott Wilson, Katia Duncan, Delmar Stone, Jonathan Dominguez, and all the other folks that are unnamed, and also Queen, who was mentioned throughout this report. And so if you aren't aware of Oregon and their work and movement to really take a look at social work licensure exams and alternatives to the ASWB exam, I encourage you to dive into it. This report is free and accessible on ResearchGate. And it is titled The Alternative Pathways to Social Work Licensure Committee Final Report and Recommendations to the Oregon Board of Licensed Social Workers on the ASWB Examination for Licensing and Certification of Professional Social Workers. I know it's a long title, which means I'm gonna just drop the link in the show notes. But the report is actually written for human consumption. It's not heavy on the research jargon. It's very clear and simple to read. It's also written from an abolitionist lens, which I thought was super dope. One of the quotes that sticks out to me is the one at the very end, and it says, like, when we know the harms that the ASWB exam has done to Black, it says BIPOC social workers, but I don't like BIPOC. Anyways, Black, Brown, Indigenous, and people of color social workers. And when we know that the ASWB exam does not assess the ability of a social worker, is it fair or right to maintain these barriers to enter the social profession? Like, that is just a question that we all need to continue to ask ourselves. I'm not going to go further into this whole situation with ASWB exams because I was able to chop it up with two of my favorite cousins on this topic. So, Matt DiCarlo and Jen, and that episode is going to release in the coming weeks. And so I will encourage y'all to swing back through and hear that full conversation just on licensure alternatives and the history of social work examinations. But shout out to the cousins and the homies in Oregon doing the good work, putting together a phenomenal report that people like myself, to help support our organizing efforts here in Virginia and other people who are looking to do the same in their states, right? And so once again, I'm gonna put the link for this article into the show notes, but it is available for free, open source on ResearchGate. Now, let's get into some Earth is Ghetto. And where do I begin? I'm gonna have to just start with CultureCon. Y'all, I went to CultureCon. Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay, let me start right here. Let me actually explain what CultureCon is for the cousins who may not be familiar with it or have not heard of CultureCon before. CultureCon, I'm gonna read it straight from the website, but then I'm gonna give you my definition of what that shit is. But CultureCon on the website says is a community conference where Black creatives, professionals, and entrepreneurs can connect, learn, and build together. It's 2 days filled of workshops, activations, networking, a career fair, and conversations with culture shifters that you won't find anywhere else. And so at CultureCon, full of inspiration, full of beautiful Black people, full of beautiful Black brilliance. And I really thought that I was not going to be able to attend. And so CultureCon this year happened in New York, where it has happened in years previous. There's also been a CultureCon in LA that has happened with like within the same year. I believe one like was in the spring and one was in the fall. And I had CultureCon on my list when I was in January of 2024. And it's hard to believe like 2024 is getting ready to wrap its ass up and head up out of here. But in January of 2024, I was looking ahead. I was like, all right, bet, like, what are the things that I would like to accomplish or experience this year? And CultureCon was on my list. And I knew it was in October. I was like, how can I make this happen? But then, like, life began to do what life does. And CultureCon slowly became like one of the things I had to take off of my list of actually making happen. And so I just accepted the fact that I was not going to be able to make it to CultureCon this year. But then, When I say no, Black Jesus says yes. So I get an email from the Creative Collective NYC, and it was like, yo, here's some tickets to CultureCon. And I was like, bitch, what? What? Because keep in mind, CultureCon got a little price to it. You know what I'm saying? Not a price that I couldn't figure out how to make it shake and write it off, because this is definitely a business trip. So, you know, I get the email from the Creative Collective with the tickets to CultureCon. And what's wild is I attempted to actually give them away to like cousins that I knew in New York. I was like, hey, I got these free tickets to CultureCon. If you want them, you can have them. And they was like, oh, no, we already got our own tickets. I was like, oh, bet. And I was like, oh, shit, I'm so psyched with these tickets. What do I do? And then I hit, you know, some of my actual homies up in real life. I said, look, this thing has happened. I need to make this happen. Like, I need to find a way to CultureCon, right? And they were like, you absolutely need to find a way to CultureCon. And so I started doing what I do, working out the numbers, figuring out the best way to get there. I'm looking at bus tickets, knowing good and well my ass hate the bus. Greyhound, Flick, Mega, it don't matter who it is. I hate the goddamn bus, because the one time I took the bus to New York and back, the going trip was just fine. But coming back, that shit was wild. Wild. I will never get on Greyhound again. That man had a rooster on Greyhound, and the Greyhound driver was encapsulated in like plexiglass. So I was like, what type of shit be happening on the Greyhound where the driver is locked up behind plexiglass like we at the corner store? Hell no. I'm not ever getting back on this bus. Then the bus ended up pulled over on 95 because some shit went down. No. So I looked at bus tickets. So I was like, all right, because the plane tickets, I was like, who wants to fly to New York? Like, keep it a buck. If you don't have to fly to New York City, why would you fly to New York City? But the plane tickets were cheaper and on par, honestly, with like some of these round trip bus tickets, and cheaper than the Amtrak tickets. So I was like, all right, let me get the plane ticket. But then I was thinking, do I really want to take my ass all the way out to Queens to get to the airport and then have to truck back into the city? Like, it is a mission to get to either JFK or LaGuardia back and forth to the city. So I said, no, I'm not flying to New York. That's wild. I'm damn sure not driving, because that's just dumb. And so I ended up with an Amtrak ticket, but that was after me working the algorithms and the system, because y'all, Amtrak was playing in my goddamn face. Amtrak was trying to tell me to get on them people train for 6 hours to get from Richmond, Virginia to New York City. It was $400. I said, I know you lying. I know you lying. Pete Buttigieg, what the hell going on here? I know you is telling a bold-faced lie, because I have taken Amtrak to New York times before. And the trick, I would say, like, you know, one way was probably $60-something. So your round trip will be sitting at, you know, 120 or whatever, 150 max. They talking about round trip $400. I said, no, we're not doing that. And so I monitored for a little bit. I played around with departure times. I ended up landing on a ticket where, like, I had to leave dumbass early in the morning on Friday. And I got to New York around noon or whatever. But then I had to leave dumbass early Sunday morning to make it back to Richmond, but I was still able to experience CultureCon on Saturday for the full day. So let's get into that experience. I have taken a lot of time this year to work on accepting that I am a creative, right? That I do produce and create content, that I do have influence in my particular field or niche or expertise, and all of my niches and expertise. I have influence and I create content in those areas. So I had to work really hard this year just to accept the things that are true about who I am, which is like, I do create content and I am an influencer, right? Like, I don't run from it anymore. I redefine what it means for me so that I don't get caught up in all the hoopla of other people who kind of find themselves in those same spaces. And so I knew this year that once, you know, doing that work of accepting what's true for me, I was like, I have to make it to CultureCon, because that is a homecoming of sense of like other Black people that also identify as creatives across various kind of spectrums and arts and mediums and platforms. And so being able to be in that space was so incredibly affirming. And we are beautiful. I saw so many just beautiful people. And I'm trying to tell you, like, the outfits, the people did not come to play. And I knew that I was like, the people did not come to play. So, you know, for me, with CultureCon being a last minute decision, I didn't really have no time to be like, all right, bet, Kim, let's start curating a whole look and experience. I had to make things in my closet work. And so, like, shout out to me also for spending the last, I would say, like 2 years or so shifting my thinking around clothes and pieces and investing in actual, like, pieces of quality that, you know, could work with many outfits, many different looks. So I was able to put something together that I already had. And the people, they came with it. And I came with it too. I look cute. I look good. I look like I belong there. I look like I belong at CultureCon because I did belong at CultureCon. Like, I was serving a look just like the other cousins that were serving looks at CultureCon. But then being able to hear from some of the different panelists and, you know, being able to see some of the different panelists that were there. So shout out to, you know, Mina B, fellow social worker. She was up there with Michelle Clark. I hope I pronounced that baby name right. They was talking about burnout, you know, mental health, wellness, in terms of like how you handle these things and manage them as a creator and as a creative. And Mina B was bringing it. Like, she was coming with the truth. She was speaking what I found to be very affirming words to the audience, things that I was able to receive, but it was also really cool to see somebody have a different perspective on these concepts, but also to stand 10 toes down and be well informed of like what you're talking about. And then also just not romanticizing like life, like not romanticizing just, you know, experiencing what burnout is and what it's not. And so, like, shout out to the both of them for that panel. I also had a chance to attend a couple of panels on the bigger stage where Morris Chestnut was there. And if you ain't, that man is beautiful. It don't make no sense. His son is fine too. Morris Chestnut is beautiful. So he was there, the whole cast from Reasonable Doubt, they were there. They did a talk. And who else did I see? Yo, I saw Carlton Ollie from Bel-Air. So if you're not watching, if you have not watched the new season of Bel-Air, like that panel was so dope. It was a panel of Black actors on shows that focus and highlight just mental health in the entertainment or storytelling space. And so each one of the people on the panel, they play a character that's struggling with some sort of mental health or addiction. And so being able to kind of hear their perspective while also hearing their lived experiences and how the entertainment industry deals with mental health, not just in their storytelling, but the mental health and wellness of people on set. It's like there are social workers and mental health professionals in the entertainment space. Like, they're mental health coordinators. There's wellness coordinators on the sets of these movies and these TV shows. And so being able to hear that, it's like, that sounds kind of cool. Like, how do you get into that work? So even beyond that, I met so many dope people who just, you know, we were able to pour into each other, exchange information and network. I got to spend the day, like, shout out to the cousin Tabitha. Tabitha is in New York. If anybody is in Queens, I believe Tabitha's in Queens. She got her Kitty Fest that she is currently selling tickets for. And so I want to encourage you to check out what she got going on. Let me give you her information. You can learn more about Tabitha and the work that she's doing on Instagram at the4 Air Project. And so, like I said, she got Kitty Fest coming up. So shout out to the cousin Tabitha, who I got to spend the day with at CultureCon. And shout out to the cousin Lionel, who I ran into. Lionel was actually working CultureCon, doing media and, you know, capturing as a photographer. And, you know, he stopped me to take a picture. And then he was like, oh, let me get your Instagram so that I can tag you in these pictures. And as I'm typing in my Instagram, he was like, yo, what? You're a dope Black social worker kid. Oh, what? Come to find out, y'all, Lionel was a social worker. And we had a beautiful exchange. Lionel has a phenomenal story. And it was also such an inspiration to be able to not only run across him, but just come in contact with so many beautiful Black people in the creative space, in a giving energy, a sharing energy. Also saw people that, you know, you follow them online and you consume their content. And even when you meet them in person, it was so cool to know that, like, I'm not the only one that's not weird in person. Because you know how it is, like, there are some people like you think you know them online, you consume their content, you're like, oh, this person is hella cool, but then like you see him in person, you'd be like, yo, you're strange, this is strange. But I would say all the creatives, and I didn't even take pictures with them, like I had a chance to see Cure. So if you don't know, like Cure Gaines on Instagram, he was there. Fuji Raw was there. Yeah, Fuji Ra was there. Like, and that man was beautiful. He beautiful online and he beautiful in person. And he had a mouth full of golds. Also the mess in the bag, the lady with the mess, she was there. She was so kind and so sweet. Had a chance to hear from Pinky Cole, Slutty Vegan. And Pinky's story is phenomenal. You know, the work that she's doing with just Black businesses and Black people and reinvestment, incredibly inspirational. I'm already committing to myself, and I believe this to be true and a fact, that you will see me on a CultureCon stage. It is what it is. Like, you're going to see me on a CultureCon stage, and I'm excited for when that opportunity comes my way. I know that I will be ready for it. I will not run from it. I will not question, like, is it really for me to do? Yeah, Kim, it's for you to do. It is your time. And so, like, shout out to the whole team at The Color Creative. When I tell you, they put together a well-produced event, solid. Like, it ran smooth as a bitch. Like, one of the most well-produced events I've ever gone to. And even though I got free tickets, I would pay. Like, the communication was open and it was clear to understand the different channels and information. Like, they were consistent in their communication leading up to the event. They also created all these opportunities for people to build community online prior to, you know, coming to the event in person, whether you were traveling alone to CultureCon, whether you had a niche or you had a service or whatever it is you wanted to share with the community. Like, they had a whole app for us to be able to have threads of conversation and build community. Even the actual app for CultureCon, it was easy to use. It was easy to use, easy to read, easy to make sense of. The directions to get to the space, hell, the use of the space. Even though CultureCon was sold out, you had so much room to breathe and move. And I really would love for other events to understand this, that you can sell out your event without reaching the physical capacity of the space. You were still able to move around. Like, you could stretch your arms out at CultureCon and not hit or touch nobody. And so, like, shout out to them for using that space beautifully. They had the two stages, one inside, one outside. They had activations all over the place with Shea Moisture, Amazon, Verizon, like Clinique, so many different brand activations. They even had like art pop-ups, like people wanted to just chill and sit down and make bracelets and color and vibe. Like, there are places for you to go do that. They also had a variety and a number of food trucks. Like, there was enough food to feed people. And so shout out to them for that and the variety of food to feed people. Like, anybody that knows me, you come to events in Richmond, Virginia, I get sick and tired of the same. You'll have like 5-Eleven food trucks outside and everybody got fried pork chop sandwiches, chicken wings, funnel cakes, and fries. Or catfish, macaroni and cheese. And you just be like, God damn, first of all, it's hot as hell out here. I don't want this hot ass food. I also don't want a heavy ass plate. Sometimes you just want a light little flair. Give me a little taco. Give me a little empanada. Give me something, you know. Hell, give me a little salad, a little wrap. Like, give me something. I don't want this heavy ass hot plate of food. And so, like, shout out to the event coordinators at CultureCon for really being intentional about using the space, the variety of things that were offered. And y'all, they had hella bathrooms. You hear me? Hella bathrooms. And I'm not just talking about just, you know, bummy ass porta potties, but them like trailers that have air conditioning and running water. They had hella bathrooms. And so, listen, it was a budget well spent. And I am certainly going to be back at CultureCon, not just as an attendee, but you're going to see your cousin on the stage at CultureCon. I'm going to tell you that off top. It's going to happen. Let me transition away from CultureCon and just real quick, just my like New York City. I love New York City, right? I love to go there and then leave there. I can't really see my nervous system adjusting to New York City full time, but it is great to just be in New York. You know, the vibes are good. This is my type of people. I love a kind person. I can't stand no nice person. So New York, you got kind people all over the place. Meaning like, I'm going to tell you what it is and what it isn't. You know, I'm going to give you the information off top, you know, whatever it is. So I really appreciate just the energy of New York. And so because I had a last minute trip, I had to stay in a neighborhood I hadn't stayed before. I've never stayed downtown in New York before, but I was trying to stay. I wanted to stay in Brooklyn where the event was, but that just wasn't possible. So I ended up staying downtown and I found out that I was close to the Statue of Liberty. So I was like, bet, like, all right, cool. I ain't never actually seen her, you know, old lady in the water before. So I said, let me go ahead and walk and see if I can find her. So after I got my little $7 cup of lavender latte, because fucking New York, because I couldn't even find the coffee man outside. I don't even know where he was. It was hot dog man for days. I said, you don't got hot dogs and coffee for 50 cent? Give me a little 50 cent cup of coffee. But I couldn't find him. But I found a little trendy ass coffee shop. So I got my little $7 lavender latte. And I went to go find the white lady in the water with the torch. And so I'm walking because, you know, Battery Park is right over there. I'm walking, walking, walking. And I'm seeing just troves of people. Like so many buses and just people, and people are lined up to get on these boats to, like, I guess go out to the water to get closer to the white lady with the torch. And I'm just kind of walking around the park and they're doing all this construction down there, so it's even hard to figure out how you even get into the park. But once you get into the park is actually hella nice. Like, it's a real cute park. They got art inside of there, different walking paths and benches and stuff. So the park is hella nice. And so I'm in the park and I'm walking, following the direction of traffic. I eventually ascend onto the woman in the water and I'm kind of standing there and I'm like, that's it? That's it? I know you lying. I know people ain't traveled from all over the world, that, you know, Americans are not making pilgrimages to New York City to go see that shit. And you got to keep in mind, like, coming from the West Coast, you don't have quick access to, you know, parts of the East Coast. Since living over here, I've made an effort to travel it just to kind of see the things that, you know, you hear or you think you hear about, you watch in movies, you read in books, you learn in school. So, you know, they love to teach you about the shit that be happening over here on this side of the country on the West Coast. And, you know, I didn't learn a lot about the Statue of Liberty or nothing, but I knew it was like a landmark historical for whatever reasons. But when I finally see her, I'm like, well, first of all, she's small as shit. Let me start with that. From where you are on land to her over there in that water, she mighty small and she very underwhelming, very mediocre. When I tell you I had the type of reaction where I would have been pissed off if I would have spent hella money just to come to see that. Because at the end of the day, all I could really think about was X-Men. Do you remember the first X-Men? When Rogue... they had kidnapped Rogue. Magneto and them had kidnapped Rogue and they had put Rogue up in the Statue of Liberty and they was getting ready to have her kill everybody in the whole United States or maybe just everybody in New York. So like she was inside the lady head in the water and that's all I could think about. I was like, damn, like Rogue was up in there. Dope. That's cool. So I saw the woman in the water with the torch. I was underwhelmed and then I went back on my, you know, walk to mind my business. And kind of observed that a lot of white people in New York love wearing black. I never seen folks just wear a whole bunch of black like that, especially in a city where, like, you know, people be giving the looks and the patterns, the textures and the prints. It just seems like every time I go to New York, just white folks love wearing black. Next time you'll go, check it out. Let me know if you see it too. Oh, anyways, I got a question for y'all. Are we watching Love is Blind? Let me know now, because I've tried. I watched the first episode of season 7. I made it through. I got annoyed by the girl talking about some, I'm not a gold digger, but I, you know, I date wealthy people. And the one boy talking about, yeah, I inherited my family's art company. And I was like, what is this shit? So just tell me right now, if we're going to watch Love is Blind, I'm going to watch it too, because I don't want to be left out. But somebody got to give me a bird call and let me know what's going on. Okay. Can y'all do that for me? Appreciate it. And the last thing in terms of Earth is Ghetto, I just want to let y'all know that I am actively working on this playlist. And so I know a lot of the cousins are like, yeah, girl, when I asked, like, should I drop a playlist? Like, a series of like a monthly playlist for the cousins to be able to slap and enjoy, you know, in the car, in between sessions, while you're writing notes, while you're trying to deal with the bullshit of life. And they was like, duh, yeah, we want a playlist. And so I'm working on getting this playlist to y'all. And it feels like it's going to be a monthly playlist. You know, monthly volumes, and it feel like I might have to call it like social work slaps, something like that. But it'd be open to everybody. But it'd be a variety of music, from trap to you know, damn Texas, Memphis, California, West Coast music, old school, lo-fis, everything. Like, it's gonna happen. I'm working on it. I even downloaded whatever that app was to be able to use AI to send people links. So like, I'm not scamming you. Once I start sharing these playlists every month, if I tell you in the comment section, like, drop the word hood rat and the link will be sent to your DM. That's just AI sending you the link. I promise you, I'm not trying to scam you and take all your money. But yeah, I'm actively working on getting Social Work Slaps playlist to the cousins. Bear with me. And that is all that we have for Earth is Ghetto for the week. Let's move into Tales from the Trap. So, Tales from the Trap this week, I don't have like a specific story. I have feelings and emotions because I was recently thinking about, and I don't know that I ever have this occurrence where you think about like in the past, or maybe if you've done direct service work, clinical work, assessing and diagnosing, where like you just end up developing beef with certain disorders, but like they really just piss you off when you think about certain disorders that you've had to, you know, been told by a supervisor or by billing authorization, like, oh no, that one won't get authorized for billing, so we need a different ICD-10 code or a different diagnosis in order to put that through for billing. Like, you begin to develop like resentment towards certain disorders. And I legit have smoke with oppositional defiant disorder and conduct disorder. Like, I was on a walk and I was like, yo, like, fuck OED and CD. Like, I really got upset thinking about ODD, oppositional defiant disorder, and CD, conduct disorder. And so for anyone who's not familiar with either of these disorders, so ODD, and I'm taking this just from Hopkins, John Hopkins Medicine, because I don't have a DSM in front of me at this time, but ODD is defined as a type of behavior disorder that's mostly diagnosed in childhood. Children with ODD show patterns of uncooperative, defiant, and hostile behaviors towards peers, parents, teachers, and other authority figures. They are more troubling to others than they are to themselves. And so OED is overwhelmingly diagnosed in boys in comparison to girls. You'll see ODD a lot diagnosed with Black and brown boys that come from certain economic backgrounds and enrolled in certain schools. And it can honestly, I believe we get it mixed up with mood and anxiety disorders. Truly, I do. Or even, you know, neurodivergence or just neurological, if it's ADHD or ADD or just something else is going on. ODD and CD, let me quickly define what CD is. Conduct disorder is a type of behavior disorder. It's when a child has antisocial. So he or she may disregard basic social standards and rules. They also might be irresponsible, skip school, they run away, delinquent behavior. I'm using air quotation. Steal or do things that violate the rights of other people, physically harm animals and other people, such as committing assault and other violent behaviors. And once again, this is another disorder that is overwhelmingly diagnosed in boys, but it's also one where there's other things that can play a factor. It can literally be brain damage. There can be a traumatic event. There's even some genetics to it, the history of child abuse, all types of things, social problems, all types of stuff can contribute to what people might consider as conduct disorder and or oppositional defiant disorder. But I remember these two disorders specifically, ODD more than CD, would be the ones that I would be told and coached to overwhelmingly diagnose the kids that I was working with when I did school-based treatment. Because, you know, billing knew and the supervisors knew, like, ODD, it'd get approved by insurance panels and you'll be able to, you know, be authorized for services with ODD. could be more difficult to prove some of the other diagnoses, but I just remember this overwhelming amount of Black boys that I had diagnosed with ODD to the point where I still remember the ICD-10 code, which is F91.3. And if you don't know about ICD-10, like that's literally just what you put into the electronic health records, which is a glorified cash machine, to be able to get authorization to bill and get money for treatment. And so ODD and CD have always been, for me, environmental and really kind of the result of things happening in the home, things happening in community, things happening at school. And it's just young people responding to their environments, responding to adults, responding to decisions that are made or not made, responding to not feeling safe, responding to not feeling validated, heard, respected, whatever it is. For me, ODD has always been just like, what is going on around this kid, and not like, what is wrong with the kid? Ugh. And so just the fact that something like that exists, when that shit is purely environmental, and when we see ODD pop up, like if you see it pop up on a chart, if you see it pop up in a history of a young person, I want to encourage you to think about what is going on around that kid, not like what is wrong with the kid. Because in many situations, it's something happening in their environment. Like I said, at home, at school, in the community, something is happening within that young person's environment that is then leading to that display of those types of behaviors. Kids just don't behave just out of the blue. Like they're just not just doing shit just to do it. It's responses to things that are happening in their world. And so we have to get more curious about what's happening in their world and not just looking at their behavior, only at their behavior and being like, all right, clearly you're the only problem. It is very rare that a kid is going to solely be the problem, because there's so much that's out of a kid's control. They don't control where they go to school, where they live, who their parents are, who they care, like who cares for them. They don't control a lot of shit in their lives. And so they have to learn to respond to the things around them. And depending on how those adults are trained or coached or guided to help that young person, it may be negative. It may come out looking aggressive. It may come out looking rude. It may come out looking like, you know, whatever, defiant. It may come out looking all sorts of ways. But a lot of the time, they're dealing with adults who are defiant and rude in their own right. Right? Who don't see a young person for their full humanity and respect them as a person and treat them as such. You're going to see a lot of kids that are diagnosed with ODD responding or reacting to adults that are in positions of authority, because those adults in positions of authority are drunk on power. And so, y'all, I have so much beef with ODD and CD. I want it gone, up out of here. I really want ODD gone, up out of here. And if we think about diagnosing kids with ODD, the parent, whoever is the caregiver in that child's life, they got some shit going on. Because kids just aren't oppositionally defiant just for fun. Like they're not just doing that shit. It's reactions to their environment. It's learned behavior. Like there's always a cause for the behavior. Remember, behaviors are a result of things that we eat, that we think, that we feel. Well, first of all, behaviors are a result of something that triggered us to think something, to feel something, we do something. We may not always be conscious of what happens or what we think. We may not always know how to express how we feel. The doing is pretty consistent, right? And so we have to keep in mind that when we see behaviors, they're attached to something happened, a trigger occurred, a thought happened, feelings rose up, and then we behaved and we did something. And so that same thing needs to be extended to young people. And so to hell with ODD and CD. I got forever smoke with those two disorders. I really do. And I would love to see them gone up out of here, especially ODD, gone up out of here. That is environmental. That is parental, caregiver, adult. That is everything but the young person. And I stand on that. That's all I got for Tales from the Trap for the week. Let's get into a good Black word. And so a good Black word is a part of my reflections from CultureCon. And like I said, it was a space, it was a beautiful space filled with thousands and thousands of Black creatives. And what I really noticed, just because of what that event can draw and also what it can bring out of people, is I noticed there were a number of people at CultureCon that were really seeking to be seen, if that's seen by other creatives, seen by brands, seen by, you know, publications or photographers, videographers, content creators, media folk, whoever it was. There were a number of people that I can really tell, like, oh yeah, like they working really hard for like people to see them. And then I had this kind of aha moment for myself. Like I said earlier, it goes back to me working really hard this year of not running away from my own truth of like, you know, what I'm clearly here to do in terms of my mission and purpose. And a part of me not running away from my own truth is accepting the fact that I'm already seen. Like I don't have to work hard to be seen by others. I am seen by those I'm supposed to be seen by when I'm supposed to be seen. Like I don't have to work hard for, I don't have to work hard for the attention. And where I believe that comes from is like, when we begin to create a life of when we're seen, that means we're also leaning into who we are authentically and we're operating within our purpose and we're not bending who we are to fit into the mold of what people believe we should be or where we are trying to fit in, where we just don't belong. And what I've come to recognize is that it's so much easier for other people to see you once you found yourself, right? Like, it is so much easier for other people to see you once you have found yourself, once you're not looking outside of you for you, other people can find you too. And so if there's anything inside that good Black word for you to receive, it's like, stop running from yourself. Number one, stop running from yourself and create a life where you are seen because you know who you are and what you wish to contribute to this world. And then once you start running from yourself and you create this life of who you are and you understand what you would like to contribute, it's going to be so much easier for people to find you, opportunities to find you, right? So much easier. You can't really be found when you're running. So once you stop doing that, the people and the things that are meant to see you, they'll find you and they'll see you and the things will happen. I know it's all words and it doesn't always feel like it's true because we want things to happen when we want them to happen. But if anything life is going to teach you is a lot of this shit is out of your control. Everything outside of you is out of your control. And so understanding that really allows me to not get so overwhelmed and self-doubt and shoulda, coulda, wouldas and all these desires of like, oh, I wish this and that. No. I only want what's for me when it is supposed to be for me. Because I create a life of where I'm already seen for who I am, what I'm here to contribute and what I'm here to do. I'm not running from myself. I know who I am. And so because I'm just right here at home inside of my own body, people are able to find me. Opportunities are able to find me. And so I just want to encourage people to, you know, welcome yourself back home to you so that other people and opportunities can find you. It's that simple. So that is a good Black word for the week. That is the Revolutionary Hood Rat for the week. I will be back next week with an episode with two of the cousins, like I said, and we'll be talking about the ASWB exams. It's a really dope episode, really informative episode. So hopefully you tune back in for that. But until then, and until next time, please remember to take care of your heart so that we can take care of each other, because at the end of the day, we all be gay. And that's just the truth. Y'all be well, and we will talk next time.